When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
And action!
Hello and welcome to episode 383 of the Filmmakers Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk
filmmaking,
from indie film to studio films and
high-end TV
and everything in between. How to get them made, how to make them, and how to try not to
royally F them up in our very humble opinion.
Very humbly humbled opinion.
Mm.
I'm Giles Alderson.
I am Dom Lenoir.
We are both writer, director, producers. And on the show today, we have director and screenwriter.
And producer.
Mr.
Michel Franco.
Woohoo! Dom sat down and had a great chat with Michel all about his latest film, Memory, which stars Jessica Chastain and Peter Sarsgaard. Dom, what will our audience learn from today's lesson?
Well, just from the top of my memory, conflict in storytelling, script development and world building, and collaborating with someone who understands you as your sounding board.
He also talked about working with the actors Jessica Chastain and Peter Sarsgaard and various others, as well as producing and directing, but when you're juggling both roles. He also talks about fitting budget to the story or fitting the story to the budget, but in this case, he is fitting budget to the story. And he dives into festivals and distribution as well. So thank you so much for listening. This is the Filmmakers Podcast. It's the first time you've listened. Where have you been? We have 382 other episodes to dive into, all about filmmaking, from micro budget, literally from making something for nothing, and how they did it, how they raised no money and made it. And then also people who have raised a little bit of money, whether if it's just been 50k all the way up to a million, and how they did it. We have, like I say, over 382 podcasts on exactly that, as well as some Oscar winners and BAFTA winners along the way telling you how they got there.
Quite a lot of them, actually.
Yeah, quite a lot of them.
This is an indie filmmaking podcast. It's been a little bit of a thing of mine for a while. But if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, this is an award season film, what can I learn from this? Well, you can learn everything. I mean, first of all, you can learn how someone who's at that stage in their life and their career has got there, which I found completely fascinating. And also the other way I look at it is, you know, the actual creative decisions that, you know, the collaborations, the relationships you build along the way, the hiccups, the hurdles, the routes that people go from 0 to 100. Like if you're not looking at like way ahead of you into the future and you're aiming that high, then you'll never know, you know, you'll never know how to get there. So I think you need to be looking. Whatever stage of your career, I always think looking forward is just as important as looking at the origins and the people sort of working at the indie level as well.
Totally agree. Yeah, it's so important. Aspiration, you know, aim high.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you might go and make something for nothing right now. You might go and do that, and I hope you do if you haven't yet. Just go out there and do something, even if it's a short, even if it's just you with your iPhone today. It's doing something. Put it in Final Cut and, you know, in Premiere, and just work out what shots work for you and what didn't, what you could have done better. The more you can learn from making, the better you will be as a filmmaker. But yeah, as Dom says, it goes all the way up. Aim high, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to get Jessica Chastain in your movie, aim for that.
Yeah, learn how to get Jessica Chastain in your film.
Exactly.
Do 40 drafts.
Exactly. Do the 40 rather than just the 2, you know? Make sure your script is the best it can be.
Exactly.
Which is why actors pay attention to it in the first place, even if you can't necessarily afford their normal fee.
Speaking of announcements... stop kicking me under the table, Giles.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, my legs are really long from your house to mine. The news is Dirty Boy has been announced. We're officially allowed to now say who is in the movie, which is great. Deadline Hollywood dropped the announcement the other day that we have Graham McTavish, Susie Porter, Olivia Chenery, Alice Lucy, Honor Gillies, starring alongside our lead, Stan Steenbickler, in Dirty Boy, which is produced by myself, Sarah Angrill, Marek Lichtenberg, and it's been directed and written and exec produced by Doug Rayo. Yeah, it's very exciting.
He really dug deep for this one.
Yeah, very nice. Because we are in the final stages of picture lock right now. We are very close to diving into VFX and sound mix and the grade. Yeah, getting ready for festivals. Very festival film, this one. So I'll fill you in along the way about how we get on. But yeah, very excited.
Yeah, I saw your Wars of War got to top 10 on Amazon Prime. It's quite nice.
Ah, yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, I think Signature have now released that onto Amazon Prime as AVOD, advertising video on demand, which means everyone can watch it now, technically, if you've got an Amazon Prime membership. And a lot of people have, and a lot of people think it's just come out, which is quite interesting, because we had on the podcast, what, episode 294, nearly 100 episodes ago, we had a Wars of War special with some of the cast, some of the crew, makeup, costume, DOP, and then we also had the editor and composer on as well. So if you want to listen back to how we made Wars of War, my World War II special starring Ed Westwick and Matt Willis, then please do. But right now it's on Prime, so go watch it, go support, and if you like it, give it a nice review. If you don't, shut up.
If you don't, give it a really stinking review. No, yeah. Never do that.
Please never do that. Support each other, that's the whole point of this. But if you want to support me on that front, then do. Speaking of which, Dom, your film, look at us bigging each other up at the moment, but it's true, your film Unreason must be having some updates now. That must be very close to being finished.
Yes, well, I mean, my film, sort of metaphorically, I wouldn't claim ownership of it, but I very much enjoyed producing on it. And yes, I mean, there's actually been quite a lot of really insane updates, but I can't share any of them. But right. I mean, all I can say is it's looking very good. There's some really, really cool people involved in it that will blow your mind. Yes. And we've got very, very high hopes for it. So... Yeah. Keep an eye out for those Shakespeare sisters and their shenanigans, and we'll
indeed.
There will be updates.
There will be updates on Unreason very soon. Right, should we get to the episode with Michelle Franco talking about memory and storytelling?
Let's.
And script development. Let's do that. A couple of credits to read out of Michelle's, just in case you don't know. He started off making a lot of short films before he directed his first feature film, Daniel and Anna, in 2009. Then he went on to make After Lucia. She also edited, produced, and wrote, as well as directing, editing, and producing Through the Eyes, Chronic, April's Daughter, New Order, Sundown, and now Memory. He has worked along the way with Charlotte Gainsbourg and Tim Roth as regular collaborators, and he also produced On the Rocks, which was Sofia Coppola's movie from a couple of years ago. Right, here we go. This is a reasonably short chat with Dom and Michelle, so we'll jump on at the other side and we'll dissect it in some way. Yeah, but for now, here is Dom and Michelle.
Anna said there was a man outside.
He followed me home from the Woodbury event.
Get away from the window. You all right?
It's amazing you didn't catch pneumonia.
Well, I haven't been sick in years.
You just got lost a minute ago.
No, I didn't get lost. So now I apologize if I made you feel uncomfortable the other night.
It's fine.
It's not fine.
My uncle talks about you a lot. My dad and I were maybe thinking you could care for him during the day. All you'd have to do is be there and go on walks and stuff. Why did you follow me home from the party? Or do you only remember when it's convenient?
I don't remember.
You don't know what you're doing. You're not able to make rational decisions right now.
Why did you leave?
Things were just getting complicated.
What do you mean?
Why did you and Mom stop talking?
When your mother was your age, she was out of control.
Not with me.
I'm having a really hard time.
Welcome back. The usual for you?
Oh, yeah.
What's the usual?
I don't know.
You don't
know?
No. Do you remember her?
No.
Hi, Michelle. Congratulations again on the film.
Thank you.
You must be very proud. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about, let's go first of all into your idea process and how memory sort of began for you.
You know, it's a little bit like the first love when you're young and you're told not to get into trouble and they do it anyhow, but it's normally not portrayed on screen by grown-ups. It's normally, I mean, grown-up characters. It's normally, I like how many mistakes she makes throughout the films and how they're not behaving the way they should. And I find that interesting somehow. And of course, the whole thing about her being stuck in the past and he can't remember. He's, you know, suffering this condition that will get worse by the day, probably. So how much can how much sense of this this relationship make? And plus, is it a relationship or, you know, they're surprising themselves as much as the audience is trying to follow, and it turns into a love story without it being introduced as one.
So after you've got the script in place, what was your process for the casting and getting Jessica Chastain on board and Peter Sarsgaard?
Jessica was my agent, and her agent did a great job at putting us together. And at first I didn't know, you know, I had no idea how working with Jessica would be like, but after a first Zoom meeting and then getting together and discussing the script, it was very clear that we were on the same page. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it's definitely a good match. And we already shot another movie together and we would keep working together. And then Peter came into the project because I asked her who she would like to play with. And my logic was, if it's a love story, they're you know, without chemistry, you're lost. So she always wanted to work with Peter. And when I met him, I immediately said, yes, it's the perfect guy to play Saul.
But you'd gone through the process of a casting director before this, and you'd had a few difficulties, is that right?
I was first considering to shoot the film in the UK, actually, and it proved to be very challenging budget-wise because we needed like some sort of big name to make it work. And the casting director told me something silly like, those actors you're naming are out of your league. And that's how my agent got annoyed and said, I'll get you the best, you know, not only the best actor, but a Hollywood star. And that's Jessica.
I think it's a really important thing having someone to champion you in the industry. I was talking to another producer about that the other day, someone that's really like fighting your corner and you know, believing that you can, you know, work at the top end. And you've obviously sort of done that with this one.
You need people supporting what you do, especially me being a writer, director, producer, it doesn't mean I do it all. I need a good team and people who understand my vision. And if my agent would put me with the wrong actor, it would be a disaster. So yeah, it's the way you're saying it. Yeah.
Do you find that in the last couple of years, especially with independent film, it's become, there's been a bit of a divide between what the sales agents are expecting and distributors in terms of cast versus what actually makes sense for the, you know, the budgets of the films and getting them made?
I try to ignore, to dismiss all that and try to just do what I want and what I have to do. Sometimes it means working with less money, but then it's also challenging and to keep my freedom and to stay away from the streamers and all that because I don't want input. Then, you know, I guess it's all about finding the right balance. But working with Jessica has been, I'm blessed because she's the best, you know, person I you can imagine, the best team player. So I don't see her at all as a name, you know, just the best actor you can possibly wish to have as a director.
So can you just talk a little bit about the different rehearsal processes between Jessica and Peter and how you kind of developed once they were on side with the project?
With Jessica, we sat down and read the script scene by scene and discussed, you know, particular, you know, dialogue and ideas and all that. So when we arrived to the shooting, I don't do rehearsals at all.
Okay.
I just let the actors show me what they have in mind. Or, you know, they don't even, in this case, Jessica and Peter weren't even talking at all unless the camera was rolling. That's how she played it without telling me that's what she was going to do. She just worked that way. I think that was fantastic for the film because she kept a lot to herself. And then Peter was in a different state of mind because he's like, my character doesn't remember much. I have to be spontaneous. I have to react to what's in front of me. And that's what good actors do anyhow. So they were carrying very different vibes as much as in the film. So it all made sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about where you shot the film? Because you mentioned London was initially somewhere you'd been thinking about and you decided to go to New York in the end. What sort of informed that decision and also your process? Because you've got an extensive producing background of how you look for the right budget for the right sort of story and genre.
This film could have been shot in, I think, any big city. I knew it was, English was the language for sure. So New York was a very good choice. I wanted to shoot in the UK because of the quality of the actors, but that, of course, in New York, you get also top quality. And I shot in Brooklyn because Manhattan, I feel, has been shot one too many times, and I didn't know how to look at it with a different perspective. So Brooklyn made sense also for her character, that she's living there and the brownstone where he's living. So yeah, that's how it all fell into place. But it's all about finding the right equation and not being, many people say, if it's a low budget movie, stay away from London or, you know, stay away from Paris or, I never care for what they, you know, those ideas, because then every film will look the same. So I just have to do, yeah, I get into a lot of trouble from conservative perspective, but at the end it all works out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I hear in a lot of panels, people are sort of saying, well, you know, you shouldn't do this genre for, if you're doing like your first feature film, you shouldn't do a drama or you shouldn't do a movie for, you should be shooting in one location and, you know, keeping things simple and two actors. And, you know, I think everything's possible if you work around the challenges and the, you know, that get the producing hat on and you can make incredible films, which that in itself is commercial as long as it links together.
Yeah, that's why I became a producer myself, to not have to hear that. Because it's mostly nonsense.
It is. I think it's often just very very straightforward thinking of looking at it from the outside rather than from a challenge solving perspective, which is, you know, entirely what film's about.
Yeah, but with today's technology and all, I mean, the French did it with a Nobel bag in the 60s. Or, you know, Alan Clark, you know, he did what he had to do time and again, Alan Clark. So why do now, several years later, go backwards? Which, anyhow, I think the state of cinema nowadays, it's not in this, you know, it's not at its best. So we are kind of going backwards anyhow.
You know, it is a difficult time, and it's harder than ever to get independent films, but that's why we need to make these kind of great drama films still. So, just talking about how you got into the industry, like what was your process of getting to this stage? Because, I mean, you're obviously working with A-list actors, you're making probably an award season film. You know, how did you get there from your sort of early beginnings?
I just started shooting short films on my early 20s. I didn't start cinema filmmaking or anything, so I just started doing it. And when the time came, when I was 28, I said I'll just gamble and make a film, and I wrote something very radical that I knew I could shoot with a small budget if required, and I thought I would keep making films in Mexico. I never had the ambition to shoot outside, and it was 2012 that, with a very small, let's say, in terms of size of production, or an expensive film that I shot, got the top award at Cannes, a film of mine called After Lucia. And Tim was the head of the jury, and he suggested we work together. So
amazing.
That's what got me out of Mexico. Yeah.
So I mean, that's a fairly substantial break, I guess.
Yes,
it's then you're away, because you like working with some of the same actors when they're available. Is that right? You kind of like repeat relationships.
Well, they become friends when it works. So yeah, I mean, Tim and I text or talk constantly. It's we're friends, and we have similar views on cinema, and so why not work together again? You know, I miss shooting with Tim. And I love Jessica on set, so why not shoot again together, which we already did. And Charlotte Gainsbourg, you know, these are incredible people to get inspired by.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Have you ever run into problems? Because, I mean, you mentioned taste there and people being on the same page, which I think is like one of the most important things when you're trying to pitch something like a story, and you need to make sure that the actor or the head of department or the producers or the distributor really understand what the vision is, and that they know which direction you're going in. Do you ever have any challenges with trying to get people on the right page?
No, I'm a good listener, so I think they know.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean I'm going to take the suggestions. I try to surround myself with clever people in the right fit, so they're usually helping me out. And then, of course, everybody, including these big actors, know that at the end of the day, it's a dictatorship. It's whatever the director has to do, especially in this case being the writer and all. But I never abuse that position. I always do it. Yeah, but I just want the film to be as good as possible. So it's best to use, you know, to make use of everyone's talent.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't work on a studio system. That sounds like hell.
Yeah. Yeah. I come across a lot of filmmakers, and, you know, they're very much into looking for big companies to collaborate with and studio movies. And sometimes I see that the projects go so far away from what the original intention is.
Yeah.
And I think if you're an auteur filmmaker, it's incredibly important to find that original thread and keep going with it.
No, if I one day end up working with a bigger, with a studio, because I'm fully independent now, I would try to package the film. And by the time, you know, I they come to me or I go to them or whatever, I tell them, this is a script, these are the actors, these are, you know, this is what I'm doing. If you want to do it, then okay. But I wouldn't go through that process. Again, I can listen and dismiss most ideas, because that's how it works.
Yeah. or discuss.
But what you're saying is true. Many ideas could have made interesting movies, and they just go to hell because there's too many people talking.
Cooks in the kitchen. Yeah. So what were some of the most challenging scenes in memory for you to shoot? Because not everything on production goes exactly as you've imagined, and you get onto set and there's something with the character that doesn't quite align, or there's a location that's got a problem.
Well, keeping it real, I guess the AA meeting required a lot of work. The working place of Jessica, but definitely the confrontation scene, because you have many actors on frame and it goes from a very light energy to a very heavy, and then it keeps transforming. So yeah, that was a challenge for sure. And also the bed or the intimacy scenes, that was a big question mark, but the actors did such a fantastic work that they're not bad. There are a lot more than that.
So did you have to work with intimacy coordinator for those scenes? Was that part of is that the process now, or do you have your own sort of method?
Not in this case. No. I wouldn't mind it, because I'm sure there are good ones, professionals ones, but we work on such an intimate
basis anyway.
Yeah, we're the actors trust me a big deal, and it goes both ways. So there was never a need for that. But I think it's good that they exist, and I always ask if they are, you know, if the actors want them, I'm all for it. But in this case, it was the opposite. They prefer to be only with me.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's a big part of how you create these good relationships with your actors and crew, is by being open and you know, kind of open to their ideas and creating a safe space on set? Because I mean, some people like to rule with an iron hand, don't they? And I've always believed a warm sort of welcoming set is what you need for people to open up.
Yeah, it's what you're saying. I don't believe in the manipulative bullshit, you know, the puppety. I'm just very open into communicating what I'm hoping for, and I'm very respectful with actors, and I love actors. I think there are directors that suffer from having to listen to them or answer to the questions. I can even adapt my way of working. If it makes sense, you know, I don't rehearse, but if a particular actor would like to rehearse, I'm up for it. It's okay. You know, I'm never in. And if they like the work I've done before and they're there for all the right reasons, then it should work.
Yeah. No, you've definitely got to be flexible in these situations. So in terms of the, you know, the overall shoot, how many days did you shoot for this? It was 30 days or something? Was it a month roughly?
I think 6 weeks, which, yeah. Would
take 6 weeks, okay.
30 days, which is more than enough. I'm you know, at the end of a shooting, I'm exhausted and that's enough. Yeah. I never, because I don't shoot coverage, days are usually very productive, and we get a lot of, you know, if you approach it on a page count basis, we go very fast, because again, there's no coverage. So once we have it, that's something the actors love to. They don't have to match, you know, what hand was doing what. They can give them everything on each take, and that will be the scene, you know.
Yeah, I mean, do you tend to build in pickups into your schedule? Like, the, you know, the do you work? Okay, well, this is the day we're getting the day that's it. Or do you tend to like to go to the end and go into the edit, or start looking at the dailies as you go and then see? Okay, well, maybe this scene could be redone. Like, how's your process in terms of that as a sort of director and as a producer?
Well, I shoot in chronological order.
Okay, yeah.
So we should not. You know, I try not to go crazy. The schedule is pretty much the film. Of course, we don't go back and forth in a day to different locations, but pretty much order. And I have the editor on set, and I'm putting together the film every day, every week, every Saturday we'd get together, and Jessica would be there. And I just show her everything. So, you know, by the end of the second week, you can see like 30 minutes or so, and you can really see where it's going. And you can, sometimes I write new scenes or I change a little bit certain things. And then we reshoot a lot because we're always back to pretty much every location because we're shooting from in order. So, there's always time to squeeze in reshoots, which are anyhow done very fast because you know exactly what you're going for. I love reshoots. I do a lot of things that producers detest because, you know, reshoots is often like they think it's expensive. It's I don't know what. For me, it's different, you know. It's like, why would it be perfect every time, you know, if you're trying to create something that's alive, kind of alive, you know, then you go for it. And if you can make it better, why not?
I think it's always very false economy as well. When you try and sort of cut down on, you know, one or two scenes in a film that could be, you know, instrumental to, you know, the film making sense, and the, you know, the money powers are saying, well, you need to just use what you've got, and then that's the difference between the film being a success or not. It's definitely worth fighting for, and I like the fact that you have this malleable conversational approach. But listen, we've got to wrap up now. Again, it's in one of my, well, it's my joint top film of the year, so I wish you huge success with the movie, best of luck with the release.
Thank you very much. Pleasure for talking to you.
Thank you, really appreciate it. Thanks.
There we go. It was a bit of a short episode, but we really wanted to speak to Michelle because of his history and what he's done, and hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I know you did, Dom.
I did, yeah. I mean, he's just he's a really talented, multi-faceted filmmaker, really. I mean, he creates his films with a budget in mind. You know, he's thinking about the writing, the producing, and the directing at every stage of the genesis of a project and how it's going to make sense financially. So he's very, very smart guy.
Yeah, very much so. I really liked, you know, what he was saying about he, you know, ingests his idea for the script over 2 years
or a year.
And then he only needs to do one or two drafts because it's already in there. It's been percolating for a long time, which sounds amazing. And I think everyone out there going, hey, that sounds great. I'd love to just percolate an idea and do nothing else.
Or ingest, as you said.
Yes.
When I think of ingest, I think of, like, you know, when a bird, like an albatross, goes out and it collects, I don't know if albatross is the right one, but
I don't think so.
Goes out and it collects hundreds of different bits of food and then flies around for a long time, and then eventually it comes home and then it regurgitates it, but at that point it's ready.
When you've regurgitated your script. Well, they do say it's a vomit draft, the first one.
Yeah, well,
one.
There we go. Not his ones. Not Michelle's.
Not his, though,
It's like a sort of beautiful pink sparkling liquid that comes out that's...
Pink? Why pink?
I don't know. Gold sparkling liquid. There we go.
Gold. There we go. Yeah, absolutely. There we go. Yeah. I think that's really interesting because a lot of us can't do that. It's really difficult for us to, well, we can percolate on something, but then we're doing other things in between. You know, I mean, you have to work, we have to earn money. We're not, you know, directing and producing, we are doing full time, but we're also doing other jobs of directing, producing.
Giles has been working in a production job.
I'm making a load of adverts. Yeah, very well. I really enjoy it. I love the people there. It's full time. This is what you've got to do as a filmmaker, and then you do it in your evenings and your weekends. You write your scripts and you try and get things going, and you know, I've put things on the back burner because now I'm making adverts. I'm working for a company. I'm producing.
It is rough out there. It's very hard. I mean, especially in London, it's very hard to be sustainable as like someone really pushing feature film projects whilst not necessarily getting paid for it, whilst paying for like ludicrous rental bills and sort of trying to get that sort of parallel job or side job. You know, I mean, you know, COVID, the writer strikes, the actor strikes, they've all really slowed down the industry, you know, overall. And there aren't just, you know, producer director jobs just flowing in like there maybe was. I mean, they were never flowing, but there was it was like a sort of a gentle trickling river. Now it's like a stream that's battling against
go on, pink.
Being frozen or evaporated.
A pink stream.
Exactly.
Yeah,
pink.
Yeah, it's a stream that is no longer a stream. It's just
an extreme.
Very weak So yes, an extreme, which is extremely annoying. So I think that what Dom's saying is very true. It's very difficult out there. So don't beat yourself up right now too much if things aren't moving.
Beat someone else up.
No, don't do that. If you feel it's too difficult, because I know so many people are giving up, you know.
Yeah.
Johnny Grant even mentioned it on a tweet the other day that he was about to, and then he got a new agent and suddenly his script started moving again. And as a writer, and it's the same for us.
And now he's off to Disneyland for another 15 years.
Yeah, for another holiday, yeah, good for him. But it's true that for producers, there isn't that sort of safety net. Very rarely do people sort of go, hey, come and produce. It's a very different beast. You've got to collect the scripts. You've got to collect the directors and the DOPs and the crew. And as a producer in the indie film world right now in the UK, it is shit.
Mm.
There's no question about it. Yep. So, like I say, don't beat yourself up if you're struggling.
It's actually shit, even if you're not an indie producer. I mean, yeah. I mean, I've spoken to quite a few like really top end, you know, the kind of producers and that work with basically like the top directors, and you know, the sentiment is. I mean, and I'm literally talking about sort of the Christopher Nolans and. That level of you know, director.
Yeah, Matthew Vaughn's.
Yeah. Yes, those kinds of people, yeah. And they're all saying the same, which is that, you know, they're struggling to get dramas and films made. You know, stuff outside the sort of the very generic, easy popcorn movie, you know, sort of, even, I mean, they're not even safe bets, but yeah, I mean, like the tough sort of interesting dramas and subgenres and, you know, any of those kind of movies, they're really struggling to get made. So, like, if they're struggling, what are we supposed to be doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally agree. So you've got to think outside the box in terms of your filmmaking and how you can raise finance, how you can do it yourself. And, you know, I've had a lot of bigger producers in this industry, directors go, yeah, how do you keep making films? How do you keep making indie films? It's so hard for us.
Well, we don't.
Dom's right. This is the word that's coming from us.
No, we do.
But we are.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. We are, but yet even for us, it's so difficult. It's so hard, but you've got to find ways. You've got to find new ways of making a film. You look at Matt and Tori Butler Hart, who, well, they'll just go, cool, let's just do another film on the iPhone and let's get our friends in again. And again, it's not that simple. Of course, they got some money for it. But at the same time, they've just gone, right, let's go make another film. Let's go be filmmakers and learn. And it's something that's really important. If you want to do this, you've got to think out other ways. The cavalry isn't coming. No one's knocking on your door. And if they are, great, good for you, then take those opportunities.
Yeah, another thing I heard from a recent sort of, you know, producer chat was you really do need someone as a champion for you.
Hmm.
Like if you are an indie person, you need someone shouting your corner, whether it's your casting director, it's your producers, you know, it could be anyone. Like someone needs to be saying, look, this is the next great thing. This isn't just another person at the, you know, a lower end of the rung than the Hollywood films that we're sort of considering and looking at, or the studio streamers. This person's really amazing. You need to give them a shot. And you need someone like that. And it's really difficult to find someone like that. And I mean, just going back to the Dagger film, I mean, they've got Ian McKellen as their exec producer. I mean, that helps. It really helps.
Mm-hmm.
Having
yes.
someone that you know, and that came from them building a relationship with him and showing him that, you know, they knew what they were doing and that they were, you know, competent and ambitious. And you know, from his side, you know, his word goes a long way, like a really long way.
Yes, it really does. And speaking of Dagger, there is a screening, Q&A screening at the Ritzy in Brixton, which I'll be moderating. They've asked me for some reason to host.
Didn't ask the primo host.
No, they didn't ask the primo host. I mean, what's wrong with them? On the 22nd of February, down in Brixton. Yeah, so come and watch this amazing film, by the way. And then also, if you have to stay around at the end, then you can listen to me. But more importantly, you'll hear a Q&A from Matt and Tori and the rest of the cast and crew who are there on the day.
Come there for Giles. That's what it's about. It's not about them.
That's what it's about. It's about me. You're coming to hear me.
It's never about them.
Yeah, never about their amazing film Dagger and the fact that they've got another movie out there and made, which is about to go and do its tour around the UK as well. So if you can't make the Ritzy on the 22nd of Feb, then there is other screenings, so go to their website and have a look. fizzandgingerfilms.co.uk. But yeah, Dom is right. It's that I love what Michelle was saying about having a great collaborator and a really good sounding board who understands you, as well as people who are shouting your corner. And again, it's easy for us to say, go get that. But this takes you, there's no real easy fix here. There's no quick answer. This takes years of cultivating relationships and turning up to events and networking and knowing people. Me and Dom have been doing this for, you know, God,
too long.
35 years between us, too, you know? And that's a lot of people you know along the way. And not everyone's going to help you and not everyone's going to be there for you, but that's okay. You'll learn something from everyone, or how not to do something, or how this industry works. But people I've found are there for advice, and people will give it to you if you ask.
Yep, that's so true.
Don't be scared of doing that. One thing I've learned when you are speaking to new people or new investors is make sure you know what your pitch is. Make sure you know what you're asking for. Don't be wishy-washy. Set a date. If you want to make a film, set a date for it. This is the date I'm going to be making this film. You've got something to work towards. Even if you change it later, that's okay. But if you don't have a date, if you haven't got anything, you've got an idea that's in your head or something you've written down on bits of paper, it's really important to have that date. And then you can approach casting directors, you can approach agents, you can approach producers, investors with that date. Here's when we're making the movie. Are you on board this train or not? And as soon as you say that, you'll be surprised by how many more people will jump on your train, because you're actually making something. You're doing it by setting a date. So set a date, people.
Valentine's Day. If you want to go on a date, do it on Valentine's Day.
I'm script writing at the moment. I know you are, Dom. I'm working with Toby Vees on a script, and we're really close to the end of it. And obviously, we're both working. We're both busy. So we're doing this in our evenings and our weekends when we can.
Not that he's Tobiased.
What?
About it being good.
Oh, I see. He's not biased. Tobiased.
Yeah, there we go.
About it being good. Yeah, is that right? Okay, it's good. Yeah, but we're like I said, we're doing now final. It's like this. It's that great section where you get to a script and you really feel it's solid. You've got your basis, but then you now need to hack into the dialogue and just make it sharper and wittier or more interesting, or get rid of the fluff that you've repeated. And actually, usually I find that really fun and easy. And sometimes you can get stuck. You can suddenly just go, oh my God, now I've got to be really witty and clever with these lines. I don't know. Sometimes when I find you doing a vomit draft, or you're just getting through it, sometimes it's just witty and funny because you're just doing it, right? It's like, oh, this is funny. When you're trying to physically write something that might be funny or interesting or intellectual, it suddenly becomes pressurized.
Yeah, you can't. It just has to come organically. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. How do you find those processes when you're diving into fine tuning your script?
When I used to start, I would always get stuck, but I've done a lot of script stuff now. I feel like, you know, for me, it's not like acting, but it is in a way. Like, you have to like really absorb yourself into the mindset of a character, you know, how they think, you know, what influences their behaviors. I always used to be trying to, like, when people say, oh, you need to think of like quirks and charms to make them interesting. When you try and manufacture it like that, it never works. You have to find something that feels real. Like, you know, maybe it's someone you know that has a mannerism a certain way, or you can just get, you know, get yourself into the mindset of what these traits would create as a sort of general type of behavior. And then once you sort of get into the flow, like, I mean, now for me, it's about getting really good notes off really good people. I try and only get notes off like either someone that's doing exceptionally well, you know, the sort of the talk of the town type indie filmmaker, or someone really, really high up that's seen, you know, Oscar winning films and has distributed stuff that's at that level, or, you know, has a really, really strong track record. And then I try and, yeah, work from those two angles so that, you know, whatever I'm getting in notes is a really fine-tuned thing. And sometimes it might just be one note on one section of the film. And then once you get that note, it's really easy to write that bit of the thing. And then, you know, that could vastly improve one bit of the script that overall isn't working. So that's kind of how I work.
I like that. That's interesting. And I suppose by you saying someone really high up, that's because you've cultivated that relationship over a long period of time that you can send your script to and they will read it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's not always over a long period of time. Sometimes it's just being very honest and sincere and connecting with someone. But yeah, I mean, a lot of them, yeah, most of them do take, you know, years and years. so yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of connecting, you did a podcast interview that's going to be coming out very soon. And at the end of the chat, you talked about, they asked you about you and you said, yeah, you've made the film Winter Ridge. And the said producer said, oh, I've seen that film.
Yeah.
Tell us about this great moment.
Oh, yeah. It was the Poor Things junket.
The Yorgos Lanthimos movie starring Emma Stone, by the way, which means we have on the producers Ed Gurney and Andrew Lowe.
Yeah, so it was a chat with the producers, and at the end of the chat, Andrew had gone off to have a break between the next meeting or something, and Ed was there, and he sort of says, "Oh, well, you know, are you a filmmaker?" And I'm, "Yeah, yes, I'm a director. I do a bit of producing as well." And he's like, "Oh, what was your last film?" I was like, "Oh, Winter Ridge." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I've seen that."
the thing is,
there's two possible reasons for this. One, he saw it out in the wild,
right? Literally,
which is, you know, literally out in the wild, which is also, you know, pretty good.
Yes.
The second option is that I feel like I sent him an email. I think I sent Element an email, like I did sort of did a random production company sweep.
Element Pictures.
Yeah, Element Pictures. I think I did it like a year or two ago, and I targeted like a whole bunch of production companies, never heard back from any of them, but I was just telling them what I was up to and, you know, saying hello. So it's vaguely possible that he looked at that and, you know, watched the film. So you never know.
That's it. You just never know who you meet. And suddenly now, because he's watched your film, it's a much easier sort of next time you see him to say, hey, yeah, you know, we're connected.
Connected.
Very good. And yeah, and speaking of that, Poor Things, the producers of that, Ed Gurney and Andrew Lowe, they are going to be on the podcast very soon. Domhnall's already recorded that episode. So how exciting is that? Very much so.
It's pretty exciting.
I would say ridiculously exciting. Other guests coming up include Bob Marley movie One Love with director Reynaldo Marcus Green. We also have David Ayer, the director of Suicide Squad, talking about Beekeeper.
In a filmed interview.
Whew. In a filmed interview. Yes. And we also have the Promised Land director, Nikolai Arcel. So thank you so much for listening. This has been our chat with Michelle Franco.
And there is also a very nice blog to go with this, because we did have a little bit of a chat before the interview, just sort of informal at the start. So there's a few little bits we can add in to the blog as well.
Indeed. Yeah. And we've also got the blog on Matthew Vaughan as well. So if you do like reading about what we talk about as well, then do go to our website, filmmakerspodcast.com. There is a load of blogs on there. We've stopped doing some of them. Like I say, Dom has done this new one now on with Michelle Franco, with even more information about his chat on there. If you do like this podcast, tell your friends. And if you're lucky enough to rise up and do well, it is your duty to
press every button on the elevator on the way back down.
There we go. We will see you next Tuesday as always. Well, you'll certainly hear from us. Until then, take care, everyone. Bye, Dom.
Bye, Giles.
Bye, everyone. Bye. Bye, 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 bye.
Okay, I'm going now.
Bye, 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 bye. Bye, bye, bye.